Good evening, everybody. It's welcome to Erev Yom Hadin. It's in the yeshivas. Tonight is a terrifying evening. It's moments before, less than 24 hours before Yom Hadin begins. And I'd like to offer some perspectives. I'd like to offer some machshava and also offer some guidance. But before I do that, I want to share with you a dvar halacha. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu smiles when we're osek in dvar halacha. So I want to share with you a dvar halacha for the first minute or two, and then we'll get into discussing some things that are more, perhaps more penetrating in a way that we could feel, some more emotional aspects of preparing for Yom HaDin Haba Aleinu Letova. I want to ask a question, and the question is the following. Let's say you have a Baal Tokeya who's blowing a tekiah, shvarim tekiah. And after he blows his tekiah, it comes out beautifully. He blows a shvarim, two, and then he adds to a fourth two. He adds a fourth little mini blast to his set of shvarim. So instead of doing three, two, he did four, one, two, three, four, two. So the question is that fourth shvarim going to be a problem, or is that fourth shvarim going to be okay? So I'd like to share with you a Ra'avan. Ra'avan was an early Rishon, few generations before the Rush. And he asks this question, and he says, I have a proof that it should be okay. It's okay if the Baal Tokeya blows forth Shavarim. And he gives some very interesting reasons. I'd like to share them with you, and then we'll begin our Hachana Liyom Hadin, a little bit more in terms of Musar Shmuz in a few minutes. He says the following. He says, we have a Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us that, let's say, at the end of one set, you're supposed to have, at the end of one line, you're supposed to have a tekiah. At the beginning of every line, you have a tekiah. Tekiah is the bread, the outside of the sandwich, before and after. So let's say you would have a tekiah shvarim tekiah, and then you have afterward a tekiah, another shvarim tekiah. And you want the last tekiah of the first set to count as the first tekiah of the second set. Does that work? Afterwards, you'll do it twice as long. Let's say a tekiah should be 4 seconds. You'll blow an 8-second tekiah, and you want to have the tekiah to count for the end of your first set and also for the beginning of your next set. You know, we say that only counted as one tekiah. That only counted as one tekiah. Oh, but you see something fascinating. You see that even though it's counted as one tekiah, but it still is counted. Even though you wanted to do it doubly long, it still counted as one tekiah. So, says Ravan, so too should be if you're making a shvarim, if you're blowing a shvarim. Three, now you want to make it doubly long, you want to make it a fourth one, it should also work. Wait a second, you're going to say, that's not similar. When you have one tekiah, it's one kol, it's very long. So there's nothing wrong with a very long kol. Here by the shvarim, you're adding a whole new kol. You're doing two, and then you're adding a two, the fourth one. So maybe since it's a different unit, it should be independently problematic to add on. It's adding on a new kol to the shvarim that you have. So says Ravan, I'm going to bring you a few proofs that if you add on to a mitzvah, that doesn't take away your fulfillment of the original mitzvah. Now, you and I are familiar with the concept of adding on to mitzvahs. We have the problem of Baal Tosef, of course. But if you violate Baal Tosef, do you thereby lose your original mitzvah? So says the Ravan the following. Let's say you have a beged of tzitzis, 4 corners and 4 tassels for tzitzios, and you add a fifth one. So you are in violation of Baal Tosef. Says the Ravan, even though you are indeed in violation of Baal Tosef for that fifth set of tzitzis, that fifth corner that you might have added on, it is a Baal Tosef, but you did not lose the mitzvah that you did by having the first four there. So adding a fifth tzitzis to your beged of tzitzis is Baal Tosef, but you didn't lose out your mitzvah tzitzis. So too, even though you add a fourth shever, it might be Baal Tosef, I don't know if it is or isn't, but it's not going to ruin your shvarim that you did previously. Secondly, says the Ravan, when it comes to Birchas Kohanim, we know that the Kohanim give us 3 brachas, Yivarechecha, 3 brachas. Let's say a person adds his own bracha. He wants to give you a bracha for gezunt. Gezunt. It's not explicit in the first 3. So he says, Yirecha Hashem Yishmerech, Yirecha Hashem Panei V'lecha V'chanek, Yisrael Hashem Panei V'lecha V'yisim V'chal Shalom, and you should be gezunt. So that might be a violation of Baal Tosef. But did it take away, was he not Yotzi the mitzvah for the first three brachas, for the mitzvah, brichas konim, that he already recited? Says the Ravan, and he proves it without going into the proofs, yes, you are fulfilled. The kohen is in fulfillment of the original mitzvah, even though he added on something additional. Based on these proofs, on a Doraisa level, the Ravan concludes that even if a person added something on to the Shvarim, he added that fourth little kol, that two, 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 and the extra two, the fourth one, even though he did something extra, maybe he shouldn't have done something extra, that does not take away from the fulfillment of the mitzvah, the original shvarim that he did. And those are a number of proofs that the Ravan sources provides to show why you're allowed to have, certainly it's not a problem, if you have that extra two for your shvarim, that's not going to ruin what came before. That's as far as a little Dvar Halacha, just to get Hashem smiling at us before we speak a little bit of Divrei Agada.
There are
reasons. I think Reb Chaim might have had reasons without getting into that. That's a little more complicated. Yes.
But they actually did that. Five shvarim. I was there when Rosh Hashanah.
That's right. There are those who do five shvarims. It is mutter lechatchila. I'm just giving you some background of the early Rishonim who offer why it should be okay. Now, okay, Rabosai, that was just a little tidbit of halacha. Now I'd like to share with you a little mashal from Shalom Shvadron. I think my father had the opportunity to hear Shalom Shvadron in Yerushalayim a number of decades ago. And Shmuel Shvadron says the following mashal. He says there's a king, like every Rosh Hashanah story, or every Rosh Hashanah mashal, there has to be a king and a prince. And the king's son, you know, is read a shidduch to a faraway princess. And the king sends his son off to marry this woman at this faraway land. And they build a house in the faraway land. And every few days, the king would either write a letter or send a text message or a phone call, begging his son to please come back and visit. He wants to meet his son's new wife. After months and a year or two or three years pass, he says, please come back, I want to get to see my new grandchildren. Months pass, then years pass, and the son, you know, is never able to make it back to the origin of the father's kingdom to visit his father. And after some time passes, the king is absolutely desperate to see his son, his new daughter-in-law, his grandchildren, and the king says, you know what, I'm going to come to you. And the king speaks to the travel agent, sets an itinerary, and sends the itinerary to his son so that his son knows exactly where, how he's getting there, what boat line he's going to be on, what trains will take him there, and exactly where how he'll be traveling. And the king alights on, you know, gets on the boat and begins to travel over the seas to visit his son in this faraway country. And as they see land in the distance, everybody climbs on board to see if they could see their relatives at the port city. And the king grabs the front row of the right on that deck, and he looks with his binoculars, scanning the crowds on the docks, on the port, and waiting, chalishing to see his son, maybe to see a little boy, a little girl standing next to their father, his grandchildren whom he's never seen. And he doesn't see anybody from the distance that look like his son. So he says, okay, I guess I'll have to get off the boat. And when I get off the boat, I'll get onto the dock. I'll be able to see from much closer. I'll certainly see my son there. So he gets down from the boat and looks at all the people waiting. And little by little, it starts thinning out. All the people collect their visitors and move away. And he's left by himself. No one's there to pick him up. So he says, it must be my son is preparing something grand at the train station in the town where he lives. So he finds his way to the train station, boards the train with his bags, and excited to see the grand reception at the train station in his son's town. And he approaches the train station from a distance, looks ahead, he tries to listen carefully over the clamoring of the wheels against the tracks, waiting to hear a band or see balloons in the distance. He doesn't hear any band, he doesn't see the balloons, so he says, okay, I guess he's waiting on the station. And he gets off the train, looks around. Lo and behold, there's nobody waiting for him on the station. And he's very confused. But he says, okay, I guess my son is preparing some incredible reception for me in his house. He's probably so busy preparing it, he wasn't able to make it to the station to greet me. So there's some great royal welcome to me when I get to his house. So He takes a cab to his son's house, and the cab pulls up, but it's evening. The lights are basically all out, except there's a bathroom light that seems to be on upstairs. He approaches the door very confused, and he knocks on the door, and he hears in a faint, in a sleepy voice, "Who's there? Abba, Abba, is it you?" And his heart begins to pound. He heard his son's voice. "Yes, my son, it's me." And the moment passes, and he hears his son respond in that tired, sleepy voice, "You know, dear father, it's so late. I'm so tired. Do you mind just taking a hotel room up on the main street in the town, and you'll come back in the morning?" And the king is absolutely aghast and in indignation. He turns around and he says to himself, "If this is how my son will treat me, I'm just going to go home. I'm not even going to wait for tomorrow morning." He turns around, gets back in the cab, back to the train, takes the train back to the boat, takes the boat back to his kingdom, goes home. The next morning, the son realizes, you know, as he's awake, he says, "Oh my goodness, my father came all the way to me and I pushed him away. I was just tired." And so he runs quickly to the hotel and says, "Is the king here? Is the king here? Whatever his name was." And the concierge at the desk in the hotel says, "I'm sorry, we didn't have any king. We have nobody by that name. I don't know what you're talking about." And the prince realizes the opportunity that he lost. Says Rav Shalom Shvadron, we say in Shir HaShirim, "Ani yeshena, vili bi'er." Deep down, li bi'er, my heart's awake, my rotzen to come back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there, but I, externally, I'm sleeping. And amidst all this, what's happening? Kol dodi dofek. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is knocking on the door. Pischi li'achal, sirai, asi, anasi, samasi, my beloved, 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 beloved child, who I want so much to see and to spend time with and to get to know. He's knocking on the door. And we respond, Pashatati eskutanti, I'm sorry, Daddy, I already, you know, I took off my clothes, I hung it up, Echachel Bashem, Rachasis Raglai, I already brushed my teeth, I can't come down now. And then finally we realize when it is too late, Pasachti Anila Dodi. The next morning he goes to the door, Vidodi Chamakavar, by the time we get to the door, our beloved is gone. Says Rav Shalom Shvadron, all year long, HaKadosh Baruch Hu waits for us to come visit him. Desperately pleads with us, invites us, sends us all kinds of messages in all kinds of ways, text messages and phone calls and letters and all the different ways HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows how to communicate to humanity, to the Jewish people, to you and to me. And we don't get our messages. We don't follow up on the messages. We don't listen to our messages. And finally, at some point in desperation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to come to us. And he comes, Rosh Chodesh El, waiting for us to greet him at the port. And there's no one there. And there's a whole month that he waits. Are we going to run? Are we going to come up? Are we going to show up? And then he shows up finally, Erev Rosh Hashanah, are we here? And then he comes to us closer to our house, closer to ourselves on Rosh Hashanah, on Aseres Yimei Tshuva. He comes to us literally, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kvodu V'atzmo, Melech Malchem Lachem is coming. To me? To little me? Little, small in stature, puny in intelligence, small b'masim, katan mimas, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is coming to me? And he's asking us, Pischi li, achosi, rayasi, onasi, samasi, please come, open up for me. This is a Zohar that I saw quoted on that Lashon of Pischi li, on the Lashon of Shir HaShirim. Pischi li. So the Lashon that you're familiar with, but the Lashon that you're familiar with is not so easily found in the Chazal. Pischili kechuda shomachat. Open up for me a little bit, just like the eye hole of a needle. And the Zohar concludes, Ani eftach lechem sha'arim hel yonim, and I'll open up the great gates up in heaven. And I saw in the Perush HaSulam for the Zohar, he says something very interesting. He says, you know why Hashem wants us to open up a tiny hole? Because that's all we're able to. Not because that's all we have to do, because that's all we're capable of doing. We are very limited. We could only open up to Hashem a little bit, because that's all we can. But if we do the little bit that we can, HaKadosh Baruch Hu opens up Sha'arim Ha'elyonim. And that's what we are waiting for. HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to us, he's coming to us, and he's coming to our house tomorrow night he'll be knocking on your door. And the question is, how are we going to receive HaKadosh Baruch Hu? He's pleading for us to open up. We have to be ready to open up that door as much as we can. Once we start to open that door, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will push it open with a tidal wave of force, allowing himself and us to connect, to reconnect, like he so strongly desires. It was a very frightening Gemara. The Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah Yud Zayin Amud Beis, Kol Shana Sherasha Betchilasa Mis Asheres Besofa. If on Rosh Hashanah, our Rosh Hashanah starts with poverty in an impoverished way, it will become a wealthy year later in the year. What does that mean that our Rosh Hashanah comes in an impoverished way? Kol Shana She Rasha, Rash. A Rash is somebody who's absolutely poor, who's an Evyon, who's Ein Lo Kol. What that means is that on Rosh Hashanah we have to feel that we are absolutely, entirely impoverished. What do I mean? I have a house, I have my books behind me, I have my family, I have my health, I have my friends, I have my community, I have my car, I have my other car, I have my granite kitchen, I have my suits, my weekday suits, my Shabbos suits. What do you mean I'm poor? I'm not poor. I have everything, everything I want, everything I need, I have everything. No, because on Rosh Hashanah, we have absolutely nothing. We have absolutely nothing. You know, when you have a company, there are two ways to figure out the budget for the various sectors, the various departments in the company. One way is based on previous budgets. If you look at what the budget was for, let's say, R&D or sales or marketing last year, and then you figure out, do we want to go a little bit higher, a little bit low? Last year, the marketing department did a really good job. Let's give them an extra 10%. Last year, the sales department did really badly. They're not doing a good job. Let's slash their budget. R&D, we have to adjust it. We're going to add 22% to the R&D department. That's one type of accounting. But there's a completely different accounting called zero-based accounting. Zero-based accounting means I couldn't care less what you had last year. I want you to show me what I should give you. I want you to tell me why I should give you 5% of the company's budget, 10%, 20%, 40%, 80%. Prove to me what you deserve. And that's why the Maharsha writes, we know that halacha is, the Gemara tells us in Brachas, that a person who hasn't seen a friend for 12 months recites the bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem Echaye HaMeisim. Nowadays it's a question because we have telecommunication, but without getting into that, why do you say Baruch Atah Hashem Echaye HaMeisim? He wasn't dead. Says the Maharsha in that Gemara in Brachos, if 12 months passed, the Chezkas Chayim that every Jew and every human being has over the course of a Rosh Hashanah, when 12 months pass, there is definitively and definitely a Rosh Hashanah that has interjected into that 12-month period, and therefore on Rosh Hashanah, all Chazakas are off, says the Maharsha. Just because a person had a Chezkas Chayim last year doesn't mean anything about their having a Chezkas Chayim for the year to come. Rosh Hashanah is sort of like a tulip bulb. Did you ever wonder, in about 3 months, I think like, no, a little bit more, about February time, maybe even December time, the gardeners are going to come to those who want tulips, and the gardeners are going to plant tulip bulbs. And you think it's the craziest thing. There's snow outside, or before the snow. Why in the world are you putting tulip bulbs in the ground right before the winter? If you want to plant in the spring. Plant when the days are getting longer and the weather is getting warmer. No, you plant tulip bulbs in the winter, before the winter. Why? You put them in, you don't see anything. But a few months later, lo and behold, April comes. And you know, April showers bring May flowers. April comes, May comes. And all of a sudden you see beautiful tulips blossoming. That's exactly what Rosh Hashanah is. Rosh Hashanah is the seed, is that tulip bulb where everybody and everything sprouts from afterwards. We don't see it, and it's hard to imagine, but that's our goal, that's our avoda for the next 2 days, to realize that everything that this year is going to look like is being planted right now. If the gardener is going to put a purple tulip bulb in the ground, guess what? In April and May, the tulip that's going to pop is going to be purple. And if it's red, it will be red. If it's a yellow bulb, it's going to be a yellow flower. Last year on Rosh Hashanah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu planted a tuna bulb called coronavirus. And when it was last Rosh Hashanah, you and I never heard of such a thing. Maybe because it didn't even have a name. It's a novel virus. And we never imagined in a billion years, you tell me that shuls are going to be shut down for 3 months. I would tell you, what are you, What are you smoking? What are you drinking? What are you thinking? What are you imagining? I would tell you that people, you're going to have a grandparents are going to be sitting by a Seder by themselves. Everywhere. In all the neighborhoods. And it's going to be in every community. All around the world. And I would tell you that people are going to be, you're going to have from doctors or from nurses in hospitals running from bed to bed saying vidui because people can't even have their loved ones or friends with them b'shas yitzias and neshama. And I would tell you that people are going to be walking around with gloves and masks and they're going to stay inside their house for months and months and months without having any social visits. You'd say, you're nuts. That's absurd. What kind of science fiction, Stephen King novels are you reading? And yet, everything, every single one of those details were the tulips that HaKadosh Baruch Hu planted, or perhaps that we planted for ourselves, last Rosh Hashanah. Every wonderful thing that you experienced this past year, if you had a grandchild, if you had a friend who got engaged, got married, a child, a relative, a grandchild, a simcha, it all was that tulip that was planted last Rosh Hashanah. And every time that, God forbid, we had a headache this past year, that we stubbed our toe, that the S&P 500 or the Dow Jones dipped, every one of those was all planned and all planted last Rosh Hashanah. That was the tulip that was planted last Rosh Hashanah. Now we're looking back in hindsight, in 2020 hindsight, we could see, I guess it was. I guess that's how Hashem set up the world. But Rabosei, Ezehu Chacham Haroa Es Hanolad. Our avoda is now to realize, not just to realize with Yediya, but to realize with Re'iyah, which is a higher level than Yediya. Because to know something is one thing. To believe it is one thing. But to see it as a reality that you could really see as real right before your eyes, even though it's not real yet, that's called Chacham, Haroa Es Hanolad. Exactly what this coming year will look like, all the Simchas Be'ezus Hashem that this coming year could bring, and L'Havdel Chas V'Shalom, all the headaches that a person might get, all the stubbed toes that a person might get, all the other concerns and difficulties and challenges that a person might get this whole year, this coming year, they're all programmed on this one day, 2 days, with the opportunity for a little tikkun over the following week with some extra, you know, bonus rounds on Yom Kippur. You know, the newest thing with all the charity, online charity crowdfunding. Everyone has, you know, we have $1 million pot, and then after we raise $1 million, they add, okay, let's reach for 1.2 in a bonus round. That's what we get. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, you have to earn your keep this Rosh Hashanah. Afterwards, it didn't work so well. I see you could do a little bit more. Okay, you get a bonus round. We have Yom Kippur. But that's the bonus round. The din, the planting of the tulips, is tomorrow night, Rabosai. The way we're going to be zoche b'din, the way we're going to successfully plant those tulips, is with a very unusual tool. That tool is called pachad hadin. To the extent with which we are nervous, with which we are scared, frightened of what's at stake on the Yom HaDin, to that extent, we will be zoche in that very din. It's a very unusual setup that HaKadosh Baruch Hu set up, but that's what the Chachmei HaMusa tell us, that we're zoche b'din via the Pachad. The Mishnah Berurah even makes a point like that. You know, we're going to be spending so many hours davening, and of course, we don't have the shofar the first day, we have the shofar the second day, we have the shofar on Sunday, not on Shabbos, of course. But we blow the shofar numerous times. Of course, on a Doraisa level, we only have to blow 30 times. Nevertheless, the Gemara tells us that we blow before Musaf Tekios Demiusha, we blow grand during Musaf Tekios Demiumad. We blow numerous times. Why? The Gemara says, La Arbe Ves HaSatan, to confuse, to confound the Satan. I don't want to get into why or how blowing numerous times actually confuses the Satan. That's a shir unto itself. But I want to ask you a very simple question. When do we blow? We blow before Musaf and during Musaf. When do you think we should blow? Wouldn't it make more sense to blow during Shachris? Zrizim Akdimim, right? Zrizim Akdimim should tell you that you should blow. If you're going to blow, that's fine, but blow during Shachris. That's early in the day. Blow during Shachris, you want to blow again. Don't blow after Shachris. Why are we waiting half the day to blow during, before Musa, and then during Musa? Yeah, I know there's Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi says one reason. Yerushalmi says that there was once a time in under the Roman occupation that the Jews blew early in the morning during Shacharis. That was the original way to do it. And the Roman occupiers thought that the Jews were calling out to battle, and they thought the Jews were gathering early in the morning to fight against them, and they came in, they killed everybody in the shul, Rachmana Litzlan. And from that time, Chacham were misakin to do it late in the day because of that Sha'as HaShmad. That's what the Yerushalmi says. But I want to share with you one or two ideas that the Rishonim say. Bavli doesn't say that. I'll share with you what the Rokeach says. The Rokeach says something incredible. You know why we don't blow during Shacharis and we specifically wait until Musaf to blow? I said a bracha earlier. Says the Rokeach, quoting a psik to Rabbati, he says the following. So that b'sha'a she'omdim b'din, at the moment that we're going to stand b'din, which is around the time of shofar blowing, yihyu mitzuyin mileyim mitzvos v'yizku b'din. We should already be so saturated with singing the praises of Hashem, with davening, with kavanos, that by the time we get to the din, we're already saturated with so many mitzvahs that we're just going to be more easily zocha b'din. I want to take it a step further. There's a ritva. The ritva in Gemara Rosh Hashanah Daf Tezayin says, asks the same question. How come we wait all the way till Musaf to blow the shofar? Why don't you do it during Shacharis? Listen to what he says. Well, he asks the question a little bit differently. He says, how come the first with the extra set is before we daven? Maybe why don't you do the extra set after you daven? Why before Musaf? Why not after Musaf? And he says, because we want to confuse the Satan, kodem tefila, kedei shelo yastin b'tefila seinu. Our tefilos, our Musaf, has such a power that we want to confuse the Satan before we start blowing the shofar. He thinks we're done. Then all of a sudden, we start davening, and we're going to have another shofar blowing during Musaf. We specifically blow the tkiyos to miyushav before we do the tkiyos to me'uman. We blow the shofar before Musaf instead of after Musaf, so that he's already confused before our tefillos. What is this trying to say? This is saying that our tefillos are so powerful on Rosh Hashanah that we don't want him to get anything, any handle. We don't want him to have any shlita while we're being involved in our tefillos. We want to get them all confused before we even start that, because the power of our tefillos is so incredible. We don't want them to be shtared by his involvement. That's the power of our tefillos. I got a text message from a young woman in our neighborhood who's going through a very, very difficult time. Very, very, very difficult time. Abuse and terrible mental illnesses. And she said, you know, I feel like I've davened so many times that this should go away, and I should be healed from this, and I shouldn't have this problem, and the abuse should go away. And it seems as though Hashem's not answering my tefillos. I'm giving up. I can't daven anymore. I'll tell you what I responded to her. I wrote back to her, you're right. You should not be davening for yourself. Don't daven for your problems. Don't daven for your refuah shleima. Don't daven that your issues should go away. Ignore yourself on Rosh Hashanah. Don't be myopic. Don't be focused on yourself this Rosh Hashanah. Focus on things that are so much vaster than yourself, so much bigger than yourself. The power of the tefillos on Rosh Hashanah, as you'll notice and as you know, have nothing to do with let me have parnasa, let me have health, let me have nachas from my kids, let me have everything wonderful. Not at all. Nothing practically. Practically no references. All we talk about is one thing. Melech, 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 Malchus Hashem. We're asking for one thing. We're asking for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to reveal his Malchus in the world. For a time of Mashiach, when he could allow all the bracha. If we have that, then we'll have everything. That's what we're davening for. We can't be myopic and focused on the little tiny things when we have the opportunity with the koach hatfil that's so powerful. So powerful that we have to be ma'arbe the sudden before we even get to those tefillos. Because there's so much that these tefillos can accomplish. We don't want the sun. We don't say that on a Tuesday in the middle of July or Thursday during March. Let's be ma'arbe the sudden because I'm about to, you know, daven something or other. But on the tefillah of Rosh Hashanah, which is so powerful, like the Ritva was saying, we have to confuse the sun so he can't touch this. And that's what we do. The tefillos that we daven are going to be so powerful, asking for that one thing from Mashiach. Once we have that one bakasha for Klal Yisrael, for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's kavod, then all the little details will all follow, will all fill in on their own. I once told this story, I'd like to tell it again if you've heard it before. I had a call from a student of mine. This goes back before I moved to the Heights, before I moved to Lawrence, but when I lived in Washington Heights. I had a Talmud, one of my first Talmidim. He was my Talmud, I don't know, about 15, 14 years ago, in one of my first shiur, my first classes in YU, one of the first few years. And he called me, I guess, a few years after he left my shiur, and he was a ger. He might have had a Jewish grandparent, one of his Jewish grandfathers might have been Jewish, but he was a ger. And he told me, he was a very philosophical fellow, and he called me with a question. He said, you know, I just read a story. He called me right about, like, he called me shortly before Yom Kippur. And he said, you know, I just read a story about the Kloisenberger Rebbe. And before the Kloisenberger Rebbe founded his chassidus in Kiryat Sanz in Brooklyn, before he built the Laniato Hospital, of course, he was, of course, went through the Milchama. And he found himself without any family members in a DP camp right after the war. And Erev Yom Kippur in the morning, a young girl, young teenage girl, an orphan girl, came to the Rebbe and said, he was known even in the camp as the Kloisenberger Rebbe. And he said, Rebbe, my mother was killed, my father was killed, and I don't have anyone to give me a bracha like I always get Erev Yom Kippur. There's no one left in my family to put their hands on my head and to say, Yisimcha Elokim Kefrayim V'chemenashe Karach Kaleya. But you're a Rebbe. If you're a Rebbe, I want you to give me a bracha. Please give me a bracha. So he put his hands hovering above her head, and he tried to give her a bracha as though he was her father. And his eyes filled with tears, and he gave a heartfelt bracha so that she should feel as though her father, her own father, is giving her a bracha. She said thank you to the Rebbe, and then she wandered away, and obviously, evidently, she told all her friends, who also, of course, were equally orphans. And slowly, a line began to form in that DP camp, and all the Yosomim, and who wasn't a Yosom, stood in line to get a bracha from their newfound Tati, Abba, father. Now, I don't know what the Kloisenberger Rebbe planned to do on Erev Yom Kippur, 1945, 1946, whatever the year was. I don't know what his plans were, how he planned on spending. He was a tzaddik yisod olam. Talmud Chacham, gadol b'Torah. I don't know what he planned on doing that day. I know that he wasn't planning on standing in front of a line and putting his head over a bunch of young boys and girls' heads and giving them brachas. But that's what he did from the morning, from that little girl's bracha at request, until Kol Nidre, he put his hands on another head and another head and another head, on all the orphan children's head, as a father to every one of them. That was the story that my student had read. And he said, what's the deal, Rabbi Orlean? What's this deal with the whole bracha thing? So I told him, he's a philosophical fellow. I tried to explain to him the concept of a bracha, a tzaddik. And then he said, you know, Rabbi, is this like a Hasidic thing? Or do all Jews do this? And then it snapped. It clicked. I got it. I had an epiphany. I realized. He's a ger. He doesn't have a father to give him a bracha with which to enter Yom Kippur. He wants me to give him a bracha. That's what he was really asking. That's what he was asking me. So over the phone, I gave him a Yisimcha Elokim Kefrayim V'Chemenashe. I gave that. The whole text. I don't even say it to my own kids. The whole text that you should your feet should take you running to mitzvahs, and you should want to do Ratzon Hashem, you should become a tzaddik. The whole thing I gave him. Every Erev Yom Kippur, it's been well over a decade, he calls me, Rabbi Orlean, do you have time for my bracha yet? Is it time for my bracha? He wants a bracha so badly. Every Erev Yom Kippur, he wants that bracha. Rabosai, we're all Hashem's children. And as desperately as we all want to feel His hand on our head, as desperately as we want to receive a bracha from Him a bracha for chayim, a bracha for gezunt, a bracha of hatzlacha at work, a bracha for parnasa, a bracha for shiduchim, who doesn't need, a bracha for nachas, from the children, grandchildren, a bracha for all the things that we're looking for, all the things that are what we call life. He wants to give us that bracha more than we want to receive that bracha. Yosir mimashah egel rotze lineka aim rotze lahanik. The mother wants to nurse more than the baby wants to suckle. HaKadosh Baruch Hu ki lo yachpots b'mos hameis kim b'shuva b'darko v'chaya. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to have it good. He wants us to have so much. He wants so much for us to have. More than we can imagine. But we just have to come to the Rebbe and we have to ask, Hashem, please, please put your hand on me and give me. Give us. Let us have it, please. If we ask, there's a chance we could get. If we don't ask, there's no chance that we could get. HaKadosh Baruch Hu set us up for success. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you have such a powerful opportunity to daven for Mashiach, to daven for the Geula. You have such a powerful opportunity in this tefillah, in these tefillahs of Rosh Hashanah. I'm going to set you up for success that you will ask for these tefillahs. And I will be done you. When? Today on Rosh Hashanah. What's today? What is Rosh Hashanah? What's tomorrow? What is Rosh Hashanah? Why is Hashem done us on Rosh Hashanah? If you open up a Chumash, you will not see anywhere the fact that it's Rosh Hashanah. That Rosh Hashanah is Yom HaDin. You'll see Zichron Truah, Yom Truah. You'll see it's a Yom HaMoed. You'll see it as Nisr Malacha. You won't see anything about a Yom HaDin. Why did Hashem decide to dine us on today, on Rosh Hashanah? Let me explain my question a little bit more deeply, the way the Ran explains this question in the beginning of Rav Masechet Rosh Hashanah. We have the famous mission in Rosh Hashanah that says, Ba'arba prokim ha'olam nidon, b'cha b'atzeres al peros ha'ilon, b'pesach al hatvua, b'chag al hamayim. Everything in the world, the wheat crop is judged before the wheat grows. In the spring, and Pesach, before the wheat grows. The fruits grow in the summer, so they're judged on Shavuos, before they grow. Water comes down in the wintertime in Eretz Yisrael. So water is judged on Sukkot. And we're judged on Rosh Hashanah. Why should we be judged on Rosh Hashanah? What's the connection between Rosh Hashanah and us being judged? And this is what the Ran says. The Ran says that we found in the Psikta the following. That on the 25th day of Elul, HaKadosh Baruch Hu began to create the world. And the sixth day of creation is therefore Aleph, what we call now Aleph Tishrei. That was the day that what happened? Sha'ar Rishona, says the Psikta, Allah b'machshava Hashem decided to make a human being. Shnia, he conversed with the Malachi Hashares. B'shlishi, he gathered dirt from all over the world to use as raw material to fashion Adam. In the fourth hour of that sixth day of creation, that first day of Tishrei, the first day of what will end up being the beginning of history, Gavlo Hashem needed, with a K, needed the dirt and the water to begin to form what will ultimately become Adam HaRishon. Behei Rikmo, in the fifth hour, he shaped what man was supposed to be shaped. Bevava So Golem, he made finished the full form of a person. Bezayin, in the seventh hour of the day, Zark Bo Neshama. He injected the Neshama into this figure. The Ches Hichnis L'Ganein, the eighth hour of that day of the sixth day of creation of Aleph Tishrei, he brought Adam Harishon into Gan Eden. And on the ninth hour of the day, Nitztava, he gave the Tzivui not to eat from the Eitz Hadas, from the Eitz HaChaim. Ba'asiris, the tenth hour of the day, guess what? Adam Harishon flunked. He failed. He didn't do what he was supposed to do. Ba'achas Esrei Nidon, on the 11th hour, Adam Harishon was judged. And now the punchline. B'shtei Mesrei, in the 12th hour, Yotza B'dimus. Dimus means amnesty, acquittal. He was found innocent. Hashem accepted his tshuva. Says the Psikta, Omar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Adam HaRishon, after Adam HaRishon got acquitted and was able to stay alive on that last moments of that first day of human history, which is Aleph Tishrei. Omar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this day shall be a siman levanecha. Keshem shamadata lefanai bedin biyom zeh. V'yatzasa bedimus. Just as you stood bedin before me, and you escaped being acquitted, being found innocent, not being killed. So too your children for the rest of human history will be judged, not just Jews, all of humanity. All humans, Jews and non-Jews alike. I will judge them on this day of Rosh Hashanah that already has a propensity, on this day of Rosh Hashanah that already has a history of Yotzei Bedimus, of having success in judgment, of being forgiven in din. And that's why, says the Ran, Rosh Hashanah is the Yom HaDin. Because Hashem is setting us up for success and choosing, of all the days of the year, the one day that there's a history of being found innocent. That's Rosh Hashanah. HaKadosh Baruch is setting us up for success. He wants us. Hashem is giving us Elul. He wants to come to us like the king on the boat. HaKadosh Baruch wants to give us a bracha like the Rebbe. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is setting us up for success by giving us Rosh Hashanah the Yom HaDin on this day that already from the dawn of history was a day of judgment in a successful way. It's the day that we have the opportunity. Shetam lichuni aleichem. He says, Hashem says, this is how you're going to succeed. Shetam lichuni aleichem. When we say Hashem Melech, when we say Hashem Malach, when we say Hashem Yimloch L'olam Va'ed, we think about Hashem Melech over me, telling me what I should be doing. Hashem should be the ones, I should dictate what I want, how I'm going to carry myself moving forward, based on Ratzon Hashem, and say that with simcha, with absolute joy. When we say the words, Kadshena b'mitzvosecha, in Shmona Esther, we say, V'kidashtanu b'mitzvosecha, we should be smiling ear to ear, with joy, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you gave us the opportunity to serve you. What greater gifts could you have given anybody, anywhere? And you gave it to us. We have to feel that simcha of being an Eved Hashem. That's Shetam Lichuni Aleichem. You know, when it comes to, I'll finish with this idea, just a very practical point. Aside from trying to have the simcha when we say everything that relates to Machas, aside from having the simcha when we say Kachena B'mitzvah Secha, we have Simon, the Gemara says Simon and Milsa. We have Simon and on the night of, over all of Rosh Hashanah, but specifically on the night of the Rosh Hashanah, on both nights, and we eat special foods that have the simon so that our enemies should be destroyed, and we should have Shnifre Venirbe, all the different Simonim. And the Yushami says you're not supposed to sleep on Rosh Hashanah, so you don't have a sleep a year. When I was in the Mir 15, 20 years ago, tonight, Erev Rosh Hashanah night, Erev Rosh Hashanah, I heard a shmooze from the tzaddik with Binyamin Finkel, one of the tzaddikei Yerushalayim. And you know what he said? He said the following, and I am encouraging each one of you to accept this very specific point upon yourselves and to discuss it with your families before Rosh Hashanah. Siman is milsa. I eat a carrot so that my gzardin should be ripped up. I eat a beet so that my enemies should be destroyed. I'm not going to take a nap on Rosh Hashanah afternoon so I don't have a sleepy year. Listen, Rabosai. No kaas. No kaas, no matter what. No matter what. Your kids talk back to you. Your wife spills a pot of hot chicken soup on your brand new shirt and tie and suit. And you have to clean it up yourself. And you can't tear paper towels because it's Rosh Hashanah. Smile. No kaas whatsoever. Simana milsa. We don't want a year with kaas. We don't want a year of things that would a year that we might have to chas hashalom, get angry. No. No kaas whatsoever. Be mekabel right now. That no matter what, no matter who, no matter if the person sits in your seat in shul and the person sitting next to you is screaming the way you don't like it, whatever it is, whether you're not happy the way the gabbai gave you this aliyah, this kibbut or that kibbut, or you got what you want, what you didn't want, everything's wrong, especially at home, especially with your kids and your spouse. No kaas whatsoever. That's going to be the simana milsa that we'll be mekabel upon ourselves. To try, and really try, and think about it actively. Before you walk in the door, I have to make sure this meal, no kaas, no matter what. Before I come to shul, even if someone's sitting in my seat, even if the davening's not the way I wanted it, expected it, because of all the COVID adjustments, no kaas whatsoever. That's going to be our simana milsa. We should be zocha all together for a year where HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers all of our tefillos. You know why? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to answer all of our tefillos. We should have a year where we invite HaKadosh Baruch Hu into our home, because you know why? Because Hashem so much wants to come into our home. We should have a year dedicated to serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to elevating our learning Torah. You know why? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to help us do that if He sees that we open up our Pesach as much as we can, that little bit that we're able. that Pesach Shomachat, Kepischa Shomachat, Kechuda Shomachat. And we should be zocher for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to pour and to pour and to pour in an abundance that we can't even begin to fathom, begin to imagine the abundance of bracha that He has the capacity to pour on us, an abundance of bracha, of simcha, of chayim, of shiduchim, of refuos, of yeshuos, of geula, geula for the prat, geula for all of Klal Yisrael, geula for the world, geula for the shechina as well. And we should be zocher, I wish all of you a ksiva v'chasima tova. I want to thank you all for joining, and I want to thank you all for, you know, all the time. It's always makes me feel good to have, you know, the chevra that we have here on the phone coming all year long to all the shiurim on Zoom, and I'm very appreciative, you know. They say, ein melech below am, but you know what? Ein rav below tzibur. Same thing. So if you wouldn't be on my Zoom, if you wouldn't be coming to the shiurim, I would have nothing to say and no reason to prepare, and I thank you. You know, after at the end of the year, I want to express my hakaras hatov to each and every one of you for enabling me to have the opportunity to teach, for enabling me to have the opportunity to talk and learning with all of you. And I wish you and all of us ksiva chsimatova, good kibben shtiyar.